Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 125, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Tim, we appreciate you as always. First question I got to ask you, how'd you feel about the holding call at the end of the game?
I didn't disagree with it. And that was before I heard James Bradberry. Look, I think the play earlier in the game where Juju Smith-Schuster was grabbed by Bradberry should have been a hold. And I thought that he held him late in the game. And I just don't subscribe to the philosophy that officials should officiate a game differently because it's close. Like, is offsides not offsides because it's close? Is roughing the passer not roughing the passer because it's close? Like, to me, I don't feel like a game should be officiated that way. I feel like a game, like, the rules are the rules, and, you know, no matter the circumstances, that should be how a game is officiated.
I just hate it, though, that the Super Bowl basically ended on a holding call after 58 really good minutes of football. I thought, oh, I wanted to see what the Eagles would do if they got the ball back. Yeah. I wanted to see it play out. But, you know, holding call or not, however you feel about the call, I mean, that was a heck of a game from Patrick Mahomes. That was a heck of an offensive adjustment from Andy Reid. And I don't see Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes slowing down anytime soon. So I look at the Titans' perspective, and I'm thinking, okay, if the Kansas City Chiefs are constantly going to be in that conversation, and they've been in the AFC Championship, they don't miss the AFC Championship, and you're competing with the Bengals and the Bills and the Ravens, and maybe the Jags are ascending, maybe the Chargers are ascending, where does that leave the Tennessee Titans in the AFC playoff picture?
Yeah, seemingly. Well, first, let me say this. Look, I agree with your sentiment of the finish of the game, Caroline. Like, and I think that's probably, you know, how, I mean, most, I think, fans probably felt. Like, it almost was like, wait a second, we're going to get a couple of kneel downs and essentially an extra point. So I get that. You know, the flip side of that is if the Eagles end up winning that game and you think, well, wait a second, did Patrick Mahomes and this Chiefs dynasty just get robbed because officials are calling the game differently? So I think that's the other side of it. In terms of, you know, your question about where the Titans sit, look, I think they're in a completely different category than all the teams that you mentioned. I mean, just look, the Chiefs do not look like there's any reason that they would slow down. The Bills, I think, are going to be good for a long time. Cincinnati clearly is a team that is going to be a lot to deal with. You're right about the Chargers. I think the Jets are a team that could look drastically different if their quarterback situation changes. The Jaguars are going to be better than they've been. And so, yeah, there you can list a bunch of really good AFC teams before you get to the Tennessee Titans. And I think that's one of the challenges that teams like, you know, the Titans or the Colts or, you know, the Browns or the Steelers, you know, teams like that, you know, before you even get to mentioning those teams. So, yeah, I think it means that you have your work cut out for you as a front office and a coaching staff and ownership. And I think unless you are being creative and attacking it aggressively, you'll be one of the teams that's on the outside looking in.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, what do you think about the whole Derek Carr thing now? It seems like he's not doing Oakland any favors. He's like, listen, no, you're going to have to cut me because I'm not agreeing to a trade, which I think, you know, egg on Oakland's face because they showed their hand too early, and now he's making them pay for it.
Yeah. D-Mace, you're showing your age, man. I mean, he's not doing Oakland or Las Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas. I say Oakland. Oakland is still in my head. The Vegas Raiders.
Yeah. By the time you get Vegas, they're going to move to another city.
Exactly.
They're going to go back to Oakland.
Hey, 5 push-ups for D-Mace. Actually, 10 because he said it twice. Yeah, look, I mean, they didn't do him any favors either. You know, they benched him at the end of the year because they were afraid that he may get hurt and they'd be on the hook for all that money. He shouldn't do him any favors. Look, I just – and I said this you know, back when it happened, I just would be very careful if I were the Raiders, because I think if Derek Carr is your starting point, I think it's easier to get worse than better at the quarterback position. So let's just play this out a little bit. You essentially were going to pay him $33 million for the 2023 season, and then on the hook for seven more for the 2024 season. So you're basically talking about $40 million over the next 2 years, right? And then it'd be a little bit more than that, obviously, for the 2024 season. Well, we're entering a period now where quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks, are making $50 million a year, and oftentimes it's fully guaranteed on those. So you have Derek Carr for next year, basically at $33 million, and then on the hook for some the following year. I'm sorry, but that's a bit of a bargain. And while you maybe feel like you can potentially get better, you know, at the time they started making those decisions, Tom Brady maybe was still in the mix. Maybe you feel like Aaron Rodgers is potential. But what if you don't get him? What if you don't get Aaron Rodgers? And now you are in the, you know, the Jimmy Garoppolo tier of quarterbacks. Well, what are you paying him? Like, you're paying him more than you were on the hook for on Derek Carr, and Jimmy Garoppolo can never stay healthy. So I just, until I know what, you know, the Raiders are doing at quarterback, I'm not sure that they improved. I don't know who it's going to be. So that's the part of it for me where I think, like, it all sounds good now because it was a disappointing year with Derek Carr, but where are you going next? That's where it's better.
No, you're absolutely right. I just thought they, you know, the Raiders showed their hand a little bit too soon. And whatever relationship that Derek had with the Raiders, it's all but, you know, done with. And even if they wanted to bring him back, I don't think he would go back unless they paid him.
Yeah, and
D-Mace,
I'd ask you, who's the quarterback that goes there that you're like, yeah, you know what? Boom. He's definitely better. Aaron Rodgers, you and I would agree on that.
Yeah, that's it. Unless Tom Brady comes back, I can't see another quarterback going to the Raiders.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. And so you maybe say like, hey, how does this play out with Lamar? But it just doesn't seem like that's the fit out there. And so like, who's the guy that's better? Like, that's it. So now maybe you're in a scenario where you're drafting somebody and trying to, maybe that's the case. But, as I look at it, I just think that while it probably seemed like a good idea, maybe you get better, but I think it's more than likely that you don't.
Now, do you think the Cincinnati Bengals will work out a deal with T. Higgins? Because after T. Higgins, then it's going to be Ja'Marr Chase. And then after Ja'Marr Chase, or during the whole Ja'Marr Chase contract, is going to be Joe Burrow. And he's going to command, close to $50, if not $50 million per year. So do you think they get a deal done with T. Higgins, or do you think they move him?
If I'm T. Higgins, I'm trying to see what the market is. Because, you know, when you look at, like, what are we saying top wide receiver money is now? Like, it's probably 30 a year, you know, maybe. Like, especially if you're to the point that, you know, where, you know, the team is kind of in a bind in terms of everything that you just said. Like, because it's, you know, you're not the only one that's coming up, right? And so, you know, that's part of the challenge. And I think that, listen, in fairness to some of the heat that the Titans, you know, have gotten on A.J. Brown, I think part of the Titans scenario was, well, like, we're looking around at other people too, right? Jeffrey Simmons, we've paid the quarterback, we've paid the running back. Like, we're trying to figure out, like, how that works. And so I think that in Cincinnati, I just don't see how you can do it, because while it may allow you to keep Higgins, you then are in a scenario where Chase, who's probably better when it's time for him, you can't commit that kind of money to the position. So, And then if I'm T. Higgins' agent, basically what I'm saying is like, no, I want to see the market, because we're not going to take some type of discount knowing what's upcoming in Cincinnati just to stay in Cincinnati.
Now, what do you think it would cost for a team to get T. Higgins? Do you think it'd be a first round, or do you think it'd be more so of a two second rounds in a third round?
Well, I think his scenario is this. So next year, so the 2023 season, because he was a second rounder, right? So, is that right? Yeah, he's a second rounder. And so because of that, you know, he ends up being completely free at the end of the 2023 season, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, look, if I'm Cincinnati, I mean, I'm making him play next year in that scenario, right? Like, why would you?
Unless somebody offers you something that, you know, you can't walk away from a deal this year right before the draft that you just can't walk away from.
Yeah, like that's potential. But I guess what I would say is this. Here's how I would look at it if I was Cincinnati. Like, I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. And so, like, keeping Higgins, listen, unless he's just furious, because here's the other side of it. The other side of it is, you know, what's the pressure from Higgins? Mm-hmm. Is he like, hey, guys, like, I've outperformed this. Like, trade me, and I'm going to go sign a new deal somewhere else. And then I think that the contingent new deal somewhere else matters. But, like, I mean, my hope would obviously be, listen, I know I'm only going to get him on his rookie deal. I'm going to have him on his rookie contract, and hopefully we win a Super Bowl because we've got essentially two number ones. I mean, that would be my hope. But I think that, and maybe this is what you're referring to, is it's a diva wide receiver in you that's like, no, man, like he's going in and saying, like, listen, Ellis, I've already outperformed, you know, the contract here. Let's go ahead and re-sign me. If you don't re-sign me, you know, you're not going to see me. So go ahead and sign and trade for me and get the picks that you would get. And look, I think that's a real scenario. It just doesn't feel like Cincinnati is typically involved in those big, you know, trades. And so that's why I could maybe see something different happening.
Tim Hasselbeck sticks around with us coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, the Colts just hired Shane Steichen, former Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator, as their head coach. What do you know about Shane Steichen? What do you make of that hire?
Well, I guess I would just say this. I think the success that Philadelphia had this year offensively, and I think the uniqueness of what you know, they were doing on offense, and the development of Jalen Hurts certainly made him somebody that was very interesting to a lot of people. You know, I think it's one thing to be an offensive coordinator, and I think I talked to you guys about this last week. You come in, and there's a really good player at the position, a proven player at the position. It's like, well, is it the player or is it the coach? You know, and I think, you know, with Jalen Hurts, there's been obvious development, and I think there clearly was creativity offensively. And so I think for those reasons, that makes sense. And, you know, I think the idea that you could reboot at the quarterback position with Indianapolis, I think probably is also attractive. So I think it makes sense. I also think probably you know, maybe at one point Jeff Saturday was considered, you know, one of the favorites for that job. And I just think that, I don't know, I just think the PR associated with that probably, you know, was working against Jeff in terms of getting that job. And so ultimately, I think, you know, a guy with the success that he had in Shane Steichen this year with the Eagles, I think is a lot more digestible for everybody.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, I got a question on Steichen. I saw where he is going to be calling the plays, and obviously you can have success doing that, right? Andy Reid has been doing that for a long, long time. The best can do it. I feel like I've seen a lot of head coaches, though, who have been great coordinators, and they're young head coaches, and they want to do that, and it doesn't always work. So what are the challenges, what are the pluses and minuses of bringing in an offensive mind as a young head coach who's now trying to do the two things?
I think it all depends on who you have around that coach. So like you mentioned, you know, Andy Reid, you know, now I think it's one thing. I mean, shoot, he's been a head coach for so long, but I mean, he was, even like when it was Brad Childress or Rob Dauhauer before that, or he's, you know, like Marty Morningwick, like he's had offensive coordinators in the past, but would still call plays. And I think like, think of Kyle Shanahan, like he's still calling plays. I think ultimately you still need a good, you know, quote unquote offensive coordinator that when you're installing plays, because you can't do it by yourself as a head coach, especially with responsibilities as a head coach, whether it be with the media, whether it be, you know, just other issues that you have to deal with as a head coach, that, that you can trust your staff. So even if you're calling plays, you know, there's still somebody that is quote unquote the offensive coordinator that is running the installation of the plays and helping, you know, coach the coaches that are coaching, you know, each position group. So I think that's a huge factor. And then I think from a game management perspective, you need to make sure that there's somebody that you trust that is good for timeouts, game situations, you know, things of that nature, even when the defense is on the field. Because as the play caller, you know, when the offense is on the side, you know, on the sideline and you're dealing with maybe adjustments or things that you want to do next time out, there are things going out defensively of like, hey, do we want to take a timeout right here? Because we might be getting the ball back at the end of the half or things of that nature. So I think it really comes down to having a good staff around you. And I would just, like, I would say this, like from an Andy Reid perspective, and I've said this to you guys before about Andy Reid, like I think he's the best. I love Andy Reid. I think that he does a remarkable job. But he's got a lot of guys around him that have been around him for a long period of time that he trusts. And then he's done a good job of hiring good guys, that, you know, good young coaches that will learn around those players. And I think that's helped him. And even Andy hasn't been immune to clock management, you know, criticism throughout his career. So I think those are the things that are really important when that happens.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is the turf at the Super Bowl. It's interesting here because we've just had this discussion. The Titans are going to switch to the artificial surface, and one of the big factors was with the way the weather changes here, the transition zone with the grass. They've had that very issue, according to Mike Vrabel, and I think we can all think back to times where you do see guys slip on new side. But how does it happen in the Super Bowl? And, man, that's about the worst I think I've seen in an NFL game. Forget about whether it's a Super Bowl or not.
Yeah, I'll say this. I feel like this is one of the worst-kept secrets, you know, just seeing the outcry from this, you know, last Super Bowl. But, you know, my last year was in Arizona. It's a really unique scenario. I mean, I'm sure people have seen it. Essentially, there is a massive tray, you know, a larger-than-a-football-field-sized tray that slides in and out of that stadium. And, in fact, when it slides into the stadium, that becomes actually the player's parking lot for the game. It's where you park your car when you know, as the home team, when you drive to the football game. And so that huge tray, you know, I'm sure it's, I don't know how thick it is or, you know, all of that, but, like, you know, I guess it's, you know, you've planted grass onto a tray. And I don't know what happens, but, like, guys are always slipping on it. I feel like that was the case when I played there. That was over a decade ago. There have been a few bowl games where it's been an issue, because I guess when you're changing it out, you're ripping it up, and it just doesn't feel like it was strong enough. I don't know enough about types of grass and root systems and all of that, but it clearly was not okay for this game. And I feel like we've seen bowl games in the past have an issue with it. I feel like we've seen playoff games in the past that it's been an issue when it's been changed. And I would say in a controlled environment, especially if you're talking about that climate in Arizona, should never be in a scenario where guys are talking about playing in seven stud cleats Like, that should just never be the case. Like, you should really be able to play in whatever the heck you want.
Exactly. That's interesting you say that, Tim, because, you know, we have watched a lot of big games in that stadium, college and pro. I guess I've just never noticed it that much. Like even the last play of the game, Jalen Hurts is trying to run up and see how far he can throw it. His foot slips, and he has kind of an embarrassing dud on the last pass. He doesn't even get it to the first wave of defenders. That was all the grass and the plant. So I guess I've noticed it that much.
That we've seen, the kickoff in slow motion. Like, it just...
he's lucky he didn't break his ankle.
We've seen a lot of championship. I've never seen it to that level. So that this was worse than normal, don't you think?
Yeah, somebody just mentioned it was Oregon play somebody out there in a bowl game not that long ago, and guys were sliding all over the place. Like, we've seen it happen. I was talking about it with Stanford Steve and SVP the other night. There was a number of games that, and this is while the game was going on. So, look, that's an issue. I think the other side of it, and look, I don't know the answer to this. I'm not I can barely keep my grass from dying in the summertime here. And
mine's already dead, I think.
Yeah, right. Like, so, but you have players complaining about field turf because of injuries and things like that, and I get that. I didn't like field turf either. But, then the other side of it is, these stadiums that are uber expensive and you want to run every event through these stadiums. It's not just football games that are being played there. In some cases, it's, other sporting events on top of whatever, maybe pro and college sporting events and football games, maybe high school football games. You can't have just regular grass in those environments. So I think there's a lot to try to figure out with that. I just know that you should never have a field in those types of conditions, for a Super Bowl, because I think it impacted the game, and that shouldn't happen. So look, field turf is not going to be the answer, because guys are going to complain about field turf and injuries. But I would also say that, like, Pittsburgh, when they play high school football games in Pittsburgh, and they and Pitt plays their football games there, you get to the end of the year and you're like, wait a second, we're playing, a football game on painted dirt. Like, that's not okay either.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, we appreciate you for joining us. Happy Valentine's Day, Tim.
Oh, same to you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, thanks. We'll chat with you next week.
I'll make sure Derek does the push-ups.
Yeah, we'll be counting them.
And it's a running thing now.
He might be the long guy. Remember, back when I first started, he's on the sit-down mower, shirt off, sipping a nice tea. Like,
that is true. I remember that discussion. That is true.
Derek's going to be back in game shape by the end of the year. Remember, times he says Oakland and the San Diego Chargers. We're all guilty of it. I'd appreciate you, Tim. Hey, moving is no fun and can be expensive, so you can save on your next move with our Nashville's Best Deal of the Week from Black Tie Moving. Get $200 off a half-day move for just $75, or $400 off a full-day move for $150 at thegamenashville.com/deals. Coming up next, should the Titans fans be worried about something that actually has nothing really to do with the Titans? I'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.